The White House said today that the UN Security Council resolution adopted last night sends a clear message to Iraq, namely that it will face military action if it does not live up to its agreement to give UN inspectors access to suspected weapons sites. The language in the resolution, warning Iraq of the severest consequences, does not authorize an automatic military response if Iraq violates the accord. But the U.S. is confident that Iraqi President Saddam Hussein will get the message, given that the military buildup in the Gulf has not abated. NPR's Martha Raddatz reports.
The resolution passed by the Security Council was unanimous, but the interpretations of exactly what it means were quite different. Some council members went out of the way to say severest consequences did not mean approval for military force. Others said it neither approved of force nor ruled it out. But, said President Clinton, the United States stands firm.
The government of Iraq should be under no illusion. The meaning of severest consequences is clear. It provides authority to act if Iraq does not turn the commitment it has now made into compliance. As the Secretary General told the Security Council yesterday, Iraq's complete fulfillment of these obligations is the one and only aim of the agreement. No promise of peace and no policy of patience can be without its limits. Iraq's words must be matched by deeds. The world is watching.
The president avoided the words military force, but his spokesman Mike McCurry said earlier in the day that there was no doubt that severest consequences meant military action. And Pentagon spokesman Ken Bacon had no problem making that point either.
We believe that the UN Security Council resolution allows us to do anything we need to do to enforce UN Security Council resolutions. And we've felt that before this resolution, and we feel it after the resolution.
To that end, Bacon said the U.S. forces now in the Gulf will remain there for the foreseeable future. That means 36,000 men and women, two aircraft carriers, dozens of ships, and hundreds of aircraft.
We will watch closely how well Iraq complies with the U.N. agreement, and we will keep our troops there until we find out whether they are going to comply fully or not. We'll be playing this, watching this very closely over the next weeks and months, and the president will decide if the troops should be drawn down and when the force will be drawn down.
Underscoring the Pentagon's continued concerns about the region, Defense Secretary William Cohen has decided to take added precautions against the possibility of a biological weapons attack against U.S. troops. Lieutenant General Ronald Blank, the Army Surgeon General, said Cohen wants all of the troops in the Gulf vaccinated against the deadly biological agent anthrax immediately.
The Secretary was very, very concerned. Despite the threat, he was willing to take that risk. To make absolutely certain that we were providing the very best possible protection in the safest possible way to our forces.
The Pentagon had already decided last December to begin a vaccination program for all U.S. troops worldwide. This will merely expedite the program for those now in the Gulf. Lieutenant General Blank said during the 1991 Gulf War, well over 100,000 troops were vaccinated. He said that it is a safe and very effective vaccine.
It's a six-course series of shots, starting at time zero to 18 months. However, as soon as it starts, you begin developing the immunity, so you have some degree of it in a few days or a week or two. And actually, we feel fairly comfortable that at 1 month, that is 4 weeks, there is a substantial degree of protection. Though to get the best protection, you have to have the full series of shots.
Asked why the vaccine would be started at a time when diplomatic solutions to the problems in Iraq appear to be holding, the Pentagon spokesman referred to Secretary Cohen's statement, which said simply, it is a prudent force protection matter. Martha Raddatz, NPR News, Washington.
Now, the weather. Every year about this time, meteorologists at the National Oceanic and Atmospheric Administration, NOAA, take stock of how much rain and snow have been falling and what the outlook is for spring flooding. Last year, they predicted the big floods in the Red River Basin in North Dakota. This year, the forecasters have had to contend with El Niño. But as NPR's Christopher Joyce reports, the 1998 spring flooding may not be too bad.
This year's weather has El Niño's fingerprint all over it, a very wet and warm smudge. There's been little snow, but heavy rain. California has suffered some $500 million worth of weather damage this winter, and it's been raining hard in the south, in southeastern states, and up into New England. NOAA meteorologist Frank Richards says, with the weatherman's typical even-handedness, there's good news along with the bad.
The good news has been that because it's been occurring on a day-to-day basis, we haven't had it concentrated in a short period of time.
Richard says it's the intensity of rain and snow over a short period of time that most affects flooding. Low-lying land and valleys are like unplugged bathtubs. They can carry a lot of water so long as it doesn't pour in too fast.
If you have the water coming into the bathtub slowly with this opening, it's just going to run through the bathtub, and that's the hydrologic system. When you put too much water into the bathtub, you have a flood.
The Hydrologic Center reports there is a heightened risk of flood this year in a large triangular area from East Texas and the Gulf states north to Pennsylvania. And California and Florida may get floods too. But there hasn't been as much snow accumulating this year, especially in the flood-prone Midwest, because of the warm winter. So nationwide, overall flooding this spring won't be nearly as bad as last year, says Richards, so long as nothing unusual happens. Christopher Joyce, NPR News, Washington.